bringing the aggregates into view. Now, we just brought in to view contact. Contact with a beautiful sound. Beautiful sound that we were not anticipating. So, the fictional self in Buddhist thought is seen through by bringing the aggregates into view. And the aggregates are contact, our felt sense or feeling tone, our perception, our fabrication, and our consciousness. So bringing them into view. The little self, the little fictional self, the little Tim or Bouchot or Dave self, can be seen through. That's a basic teaching of Buddhism. You can actually see it through it. There's no you who sees through it, but it's seen through. It can be seen through. And that's really what Zen practice is about, seeing it through. Because this little guy, these little guys and girls, and we're all little, because it's always the childhood self in there. It's the self that, you know, that's complaining and it's afraid and that gets mad and, you know, wants its mama. It's always, even if you're 71, it's still the same little self. And you've been practicing Zazen for 40 years or whatever. It's like a spider spinning a home. I thought it was Shakespeare, but I looked it up on the web, and it's actually Walter Scott. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when at first we start to deceive. Well, actually, it's a deception, this fictional self. It's a deception that there's a guy in here who's in charge and controlling stuff and trying to monitor it, worrying about it and wishing it hadn't been like this. And it's a tangled web, and the first time we deceive, we begin trying to make the web work by spinning a home. You guys could come in here. And the points don't intersect as they should in our web. You know, they intersect. We're always trying to get them to be symmetrical, be in place. They become tangled up. They become mangled. They become messy. This is the nature of human existence. Within the constriction of the little tangled self, which is luckily a fiction. Luckily a fiction. A convenient and important and practical fiction, but a fiction nevertheless. And the other thing that's happening that's messing little Tim up is that things are always changing. Things are always changing. I just finally learned how to be a good director of an agency. It took me a long time. A long, long time. Now I've got it down. And what, I'm gone now? It's time for me to retire? You know, et cetera, et cetera. Just when you get it down, it starts changing on you. Right? Starts changing. So then you got to create more web for that change. But the webbing can't keep up with the change, so always this, you know, even if you look good, I know what's going on inside you because I know me, right? Regardless of how confident you present yourself as, something is going to be getting you soon, if it didn't already, or maybe you just totally repressed it. Yeah, maybe you did. That works for a while. Not too long, but for a while. So through Zazen, we let go of this mess. And we enjoy the changing kaleidoscope of contact, feeling, perception, fabrication, story, contact, feeling, perception, fabrication, story upon story upon story, coming back to contact, having a new feeling, a new perception, a new fabrication and more stories, right? That's cool. That's not bad. That's cool. That's what is. If you say it's bad, well then, you can say bad if you want, but it's what is. What's bad is that we try to manipulate it and control it and use this veneer of of talking to ourselves to somehow make it better, or wish it could be different, or remember how it was before and how it should be. So last week I gave the example of the motorcycle stopping at that stop sign. I said to someone after my talk, yes, that has been bugging me since they did that. And this woman said, well, I've been coming for 6 years. And I said, oh, they must have done that 8 years ago. It's been bugging for 8 years, I guess. There used to be no stop sign there. And so the traffic would just flow like the Ganges, you know, like the Mississippi. But now there's a stop sign. So the motorcycle stops. So your mind gets trapped on it then, caught on it. My mind does. So anyway, the example I gave last week of the cycle. So the early morning zazen, nice and calm, and then the cycle comes along, especially in the summer. Winter's better, but in the summer the cycle comes along and stops at the stop sign and guffaws a few times. So here's a chance for me to bring the aggregates into view, right? I'm sitting here, I'm supposedly the guiding teacher, so right? So the immediate contact of the sound, the felt sense of ugh. Felt sense is always along a continuum of pleasant to unpleasant, with neutral in between. But that one, after all these years, is still not neutral for me. Still, <ugh. laughs> so the contact, the felt sense, the perception, noisy motorcycle, and then the samskara, which is the fourth one. That's the fabrication from last time. That's the together maker, sam together skara maker. It makes something out of our contact, out of our perception, and out of our felt sense. It makes something out of it. So the perception is just the label, noisy motorcycle. But then the whatever it is, whatever the next thought is, that's the making something out of it. Maybe it's, if only they hadn't put in the stop sign. If only they hadn't put in that stop sign. And that revs up the fifth one. That gets the fifth one going, consciousness. The fifth one, the storytelling one. Oh, it shouldn't disturb me. I've been sitting here for 8 years with that, suppose, according to someone. I thought it just was yesterday. 8 years. It's just a noise. It can't ruin my meditation. It's just meditation. I shouldn't just listen to it like I listen to Shakuhachi. I should concentrate harder, you know. I'm supposed to be the guiding teacher around here. I shouldn't concentrate too hard. Then I'll get revved up myself. Why do people have motorcycles anyway? Motorcycles are ridiculous. Just some kind of macho thing that, geez, these adolescent men should grow out of. I wish we could keep the motorcycles out of the city entirely. Maybe I should have just stayed home this morning and stayed in bed. You know, I would have been better there. It's nice and quiet there. You know, on and on and on. Right? That's the fifth one. That's consciousness. That's the story time. Which is not bad. It's just that we get consumed by it and we forget to come back to the immediate contact, to the immediate feeling that goes along with the contact. And the simple labels we label, that's what our perception is. It's a simple label of something indeterminate, a noise that comes, something that we see that we give a label to. So just before I came over to meditation this morning, I went out my back door, and this really happened, by the way. It is a story, but it's a story that really happened. But what does that mean, that it really happened? I don't know. That's what I remember. So when I say it's really happening, I say this story is better than those other stories. Maybe it didn't really happen. Maybe I'm just making it up because it'll be good. You guys will get excited or interested, or I won't want to get too excited. So except anyway, this is what may have happened this morning as I walked out the back door. And you could go check in my sidewalk and see if it happened. So I walked out the back door, and I saw a dead squirrel in on the back walk. So okay, so here's the aggregates, right? So I'm seeing. First one, I'm seeing. That's not my contact. I'm seeing. I'm seeing an inert, furry blob. Then my feeling, well, what's my feeling going to be? It's not pleasure, you know, it's yuck or something. And then my perception is a dead squirrel. You don't seem to have chipmunks around, just squirrels, dead squirrel. And then I said to myself, yucky, better clean it up. And that's like the fourth one. That's the fourth, that's the samskara. That's bringing together the first three immediate experiences and making something out of them. And then I say to myself, kind of like this, well, do I have time? Now I'll be rushed. I want to sit before my talk. Oh, but if I don't clean it up, Linda will see it and she'll be pissed. And you know, she'll know that I'm putting my something over something else. I won't get into that. I better do it. Where's the shovel? I've got to get into the garage. I wonder how long it's going to take. Oh, come on, Tim, just do it. No, that's my main talk. Come on, you're supposed to be good at this kind of thing, just being with it. Just be with it, Tim. I go in the garage, shovel out, and get rid of it, and I'm rushed and cranky as I get in my car and drive 4 blocks to Zen Center because I don't have time, right? This is what happens to us as human beings. But we have a chance to bring this all into view and then not get all revved up about it. We have a chance to bring this all into view and not get revved up about it. We have a chance to release the obsessive need to weave a self through this web which controls, which monitors, which criticizes. And at the same time, we're releasing from fixation on the last two aggregates, on the fabrication and the consciousness, the making something out of it and the story we tell out of what we've made of our immediate experience, our immediate feeling, our immediate contact, our immediate perception. So here's my friend Alice in Wonderland today, you guys. When I use a word, Humpty Dumpty said in rather a scornful tone, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. The question is, said Alice, whether you can make words mean so many different things. The question is, said Humpty Dumpty, which is to be master, that's all. So we're practicing to be masters of Zen. Be masters of Zen. To let go of identification with a little self which tries to get our experience to be the way it should be. Our feelings, our perceptions, our contact to be the way it should be. To let go of that stuff. And just be with it. Just be with it. So what happens when we do that? Well, we actually are released from the idea of Tim at all, from the sense of Tim at all as a separate being who has to accomplish anything, who has to be anyone. This is a promise. It's a promise I make you. I'm making it to you that you can do this, but you have to really do this practice. You can't do just a little bit. You have to do it over and over and over again. You have to do it daily, and then you have to immerse yourself sometimes. More Alice. Just look along the road and tell me if you can see either of them, the king said to Alice. I see nobody on the road, said Alice. I only wish I had such eyes, the king remarked in a fretful tone, to be able to see nobody, and at that distance, too. Why, it's all I can do to see real people in this light. So Alice was onto something, wasn't she? She was onto something. She didn't have I would say that she was onto, which is this spaciousness of letting things be, of letting. She was still kind of confused about it. But if she did that, you know, if Lewis Carroll had given her some more time to practice, just hang out and hang out down in that hall through that living gas, she would have become a master of Zen. But she's a little confused, but she saw it. She saw it. She saw it. So, one of my favorite Basho poems, "On This Road Goes No One, This Autumn Eve." On this road goes no one, this autumn eve. No one. Leaves are falling, skies turning, many colors. No one. No one. And as I said, if you want to get... Hi, come on in. If you want to get a sense of this, just do Zen meditation. Just do it and 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 do it. Till you get discouraged and bored and pained and enlightened and unenlightened and embarrassed and ashamed and deeply calm and panicky, you know. really, you always wanted to take some form. That's the little Tim who wants it to take some form, right? That's okay, but don't pay it any mind. Just let it come in and let it go out, right? So, you know, we have priests at Zen Center, and people who are priests in training, my minimum is that they do 12 retreat days a year. At the Soto Zen Buddhist Association, it's 15 retreat days a year. At least it was.
Is it?
It was.
We're going to have to ramp it up a little bit.
And there's a reason for that, because it's only a combination of the daily sitting and the retreat sitting that gives you a chance to really get a taste of this. Many people I've counseled who've done retreats over the years, and the norm is, but nobody fits the norm, so don't get this, don't take this, don't pay attention to this. Listen to this, but then let it go through, okay? The norm is that it takes 1 to 2 days for people even to begin to experience what I'm talking about. 1 to 2 days. So people are coming to half-day retreats. Now, it's cool, one-day retreats, two-day retreats. For most people, it's not going to be till about the third or the fourth day, because you're bringing your overwrought fifth consciousness, trying to control things, Tim or Bouchot or whomever, into the Zendo, and it just takes that much time. Not for everybody. You can do it immediately. It's immediate anyway, you know. So, another example. Well, then we're going to do a meditation like we did last night. So, this example is to prepare you for the meditation. So, we had our last longer retreat, our fall retreat, in Hokioji. It was a 5-day retreat in September. And on the fourth day of that retreat, I guess it was the fourth day, which I was leading with Rosemary. On the fourth day of that retreat, we were sitting in the Zendo. It's beautiful country land with a high ridge in the back and a valley in the front and nobody around for miles. Well, wouldn't you know it? Here's the fourth day of retreat. We're sitting and gunshots start going off. And So there's the immediate. So there I am sitting, and the gunshots are going off, and they're going off kind of like a series of firecrackers. Actually, it reminds me of the 4th of July. So here's my experience. Okay, the contact of my ears. The pow, 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 my ears. The feeling, well, it's not going to be pleasant. Maybe it is for some really advanced person. Not for me. Not pleasant. I would be suspicious of anybody who's that advanced. If you find out anybody who's that advanced, they're probably repressing or suppressing. And it's better not to get too advanced in this practice, you guys. Much better. If you want to become a master of Zen, you got to let go of this advancement stuff completely. You got to let go of this comparison stuff completely. Completely. So, contact. Not good feeling. Label, hunter shooting in woods. Hunter shooting in woods. And then it the fourth one that wants to make something out of it says, what's going on? Are we safe? And I start to churn through my thoughts, telling stories. But actually, it's the fourth day of retreat. So my mind is pretty calm. So I hardly churn out any story. I'm able to come back and say, and bring that first thought, which is, are we safe? What's going on, into my breath? Just bring it into my breath. Bring it into my breath. And any time the story starts, I just come back to this. So actually, I kind of enjoy the firecrackers. There's still a little bit of unpleasant feeling about them. But you know, we're really safe. We're sitting in the Zendo. There's just guys that are hunting in the woods. So the idea that we're not safe, we're safe. So I enjoy it. I let go of it completely. But it took me 4 days. It took me 40 years. Actually, it didn't take me 40 years. I started having these experiences in my second or third year of sitting. But in retreats, I started having them. My second year of sitting. But this is a practice that you have to do over and over and over if you want to become a master of it. And of course, when you become a master of it, there's no one who's mastered it. There's great freedom, right? No one who's mastered it. So over and over in our zazen, we have a chance to zoom in, just to zoom in to this immediate contact, to this immediate feeling, and to the perceptions that we have. And then as we start to make something out of it, to bring ourselves back to that, the contact, the felt sense, or the making something out of it. Now last time we did a meditation on, those of you who were here with me last time, on coming back to the contact and the felt sense. And this morning we'll do a meditation on coming back to the contact using the first thought. And you know, the first thought, I read about this when in the late 70s, I took a course in something or other at Naropa Institute in Colorado, and they talked a lot about first thought, best thought, which is what this is about. The first thought is the best thought because we can bring it in and marry it to our contact, to our being here, and not get tripped out on the story. Okay, so now we're going to do a little meditation. So first I'm going to talk for a little bit, and then you can just, I'll let you be quiet on your own for about 3 or 4 minutes. So what you're going to be doing in the next 3 or 4 minutes is, first of all, focusing on your breathing. And then as you're breathing, as a thought comes up, just bring this first thought right into your breathing. Right into your breathing. And And as the story wants to unfold, come back to the first thought and bring it into your breathing. Or maybe by now it's the second thought or the third thought. Doesn't matter. You're just bringing the thought back to your breathing. So you're not pushing anything out. You're not trying to concentrate. You're just putting the energy into your contact, which is your breathing, the first aggregate, and your first thought about it. What your first thought of, you're beginning to make something out of your contact. So you're bringing that back and you're marrying the two. So you're going to repeat the first thought over and over as you bring yourself back to your breath. You won't fight with the story that's being created. There'll be a story. There's always a story. You'll just take thought out of it and bring it back to your breathing. Whatever thought. So now let's practice this, and I'll say a few things and then be quiet for a couple minutes. So as you bring your first thought back to your breathing, just merge with it. Just let your breath digest it. And when a new thought comes in strongly, bring that thought into your breath. See how thoroughly and rapidly you can bring a thought completely into each breath. And just ride it. Just let the thought ride the breath and merge as it's ready to. Just two or three more breaths and then open your eyes and come back to the room. Okay. So, any of you know Mara? Raise your hands if you know Mara. You don't know Mara. Oh, well. Those of you who know Mara intimately should share with the others. So Mara is the devil in Buddhism, you guys. Mara is the devil. There are all kinds of stories about Mara, right? And one of the stories is very, very simple. Very, very simple. Buddha doesn't chase Mara away, nor does he give in. He just says, Mara, I see you. Mara, I see you. Now, I could go on and tell lots of other Mara stories, too, but that's it. Mara, I see you. Mara, I see you. So that first thought and all those stories may be negative. They may trip you up, but just come back and take one of the negative stories and just ride your breath with it. One of those negative phrases in the story or a positive phrase. Don't worry. Just ride your breath with it. And that's how you will become a master of Zen. I promise. I guarantee. But you have to do what what's the name of that guy? What's the guy who did the 10,000 hour rule?
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes, Malcolm Gladwell. I'm sorry, you have to do the 10,000 hour. Now raise your hand if you don't know. Raise your hand if you do know what the 10,000 hour rule is. Yeah. Sorry about that. Because then you add it up and you think, God, I got to do a lot of zazen. Well, but if you want to become a master of something, you give yourself to it. You give yourself to it. You don't worry about time. If you love something and want to master it, you give yourself to it. It's the only way you... That's the whole point of the book, of Malcolm Gladwell's book. Isn't it? It doesn't require any special skill, right? People think, oh, Tim, you're skilled. You can just do this. Give me a break. I put in my 10,000 hours many, many years ago. And another 10,000, another 10,000, another 10,000. If you love something and you care about it, you'll do it. You'll give yourself to it. You'll move beyond time. So we can't pass beyond Mara. We can't pass through Mara. But we can no longer be bothered by Mara. Just webs. Just beautiful webs being woven all around us. Look at the little colors and all that. If you really look into those webs, you see a kaleidoscope of colors in each strand and each time it comes together. Just, right? Very rich, those webs. Human consciousness is very rich. No wonder we have so many wonderful stories and so much profundity and so much trivialness. You know? Of course, we always want the profound webs and not the trivial webs. But sorry, that's your divided knowing. The fifth aggregate, which is the web, is Vijnana. Jnana to know, J-N-A-N-A, and V divided. We need divided knowing. Divided knowing is what we can do wonderful things about it. But when we get all caught up by it, and in our daily lives, we notice how some thoughts we get more caught up on than others. We notice our clingy thoughts, our thoughts that we can just go to let go of. And most of our clingy thoughts are related to our worst fears and our most deeply held beliefs, right? And our most deeply held beliefs related to our worst fears. They're to stave off our worst fears. They're to contain them. They're to legitimize them, right? So we notice that in our daily lives. We notice that on our cushion, and that helps us notice it in our daily lives. Although we may not think it's a help. Maybe don't want to know all this stuff. We'd just rather go back into repressed mode of being. I guess that's a choice, and that's a way of protecting yourself. And sometimes you do need to protect yourself. Sometimes you do need to repress and suppress to protect yourself. That's okay. No place to, we're not trying to get anywhere. We're not trying to get advanced here, are we? I hope not. So my wife does volunteer for a nonprofit, and I've been a nonprofit director for many, many years, which I'm just stepping down from being a nonprofit director. So I know a lot about nonprofits and about kind of what their issues are and how to work with them, you know, fundraise, and deal with politicians, all that. So I know a lot of stuff to be true because of all. So I have a lot. I have an ability which Vijnana has to generalize and predict. We need Vijnana. We are generalizers and predictors. That's how we survive and prevail and actually enjoy. But I can so easily get caught by that knowledge. And I said to Linda the other day, well, I know this to be true, Linda, because, you know, she's the novice at doing nonprofits, and my wife, and I'm the expert. I know this to be true. And she said, oh, I thought you were a Zen person. And I said, oh, well, I mean that I know that this is a pattern that I noticed in the past. And I think it, and she said, yeah, but it won't necessarily be like that in the future. You know, she, who is a Zen teacher around here? Right? So we should watch ourselves. But this knowledge is wonderful. The ability to predict and generalize is wonderful. Wonderful. But then we get caught by it, and it becomes our whole existence, and we're confined by it. So one more example, or two more examples, I guess. So at my job that I'm just retiring for, we have a drop-in center for people with mental illness in North Minneapolis. I went to visit it once, and at that time it was on Broadway in North Minneapolis, and I had been there a few times before, and I went up to the door, and I'm going to go through the aggregates with you. I went up through the door to the door, and I saw a guy standing outside of the door, a big black guy who was really dressed in a ragged kind of way. And so I saw him as a contact, right? I perceived, I had a negative feeling, a kind of ugh, you know, feeling. And my perception, my label was black homeless guy. And my mental tendency, my fabrication was stay away, dangerous. And my consciousness then took off, right, as it does. Almost ran into him, I'm sweating, maybe he's a drug dealer, a gang member. And you know, I'm not doing this in sentences, right? It's just all coming up, safety, should we be here? I'm responsible for all these staff, somebody could get killed. Got to get out of here. Got to get them out of here. You know, you know, this stuff fires so quickly. You know how quickly it fires? But it can be brought into view. It can be brought into view. And luckily, then I looked at him a second time. Often we get so carried away by the story that we don't make any contact again for a long time. But I looked at him a second guy, and it was Fred. So the second time I made the contact, I had a pleasant feeling because I saw that it was Fred. And so pleasant felt sense, label, that's Fred. Then consciousness takes off. Tim, you fool, you bigot. This is Fred. This is the homeless guy who comes every day, who eats there and who, you know, showers there, and is a wonderful guy. So whatever consciousness does takes off. But then I say, hi, Fred, good to see you. I catch myself because I've made a second contact, and in the second contact, I've looked at it more closely. The first contact, I just spun right out. The first one, I really, why I looked at it more closely the second time, I don't know. Maybe it's because of my zazen. Hopefully, because of my zazen. And then I had a whole different take and a whole different story. So, as a result of that experience, I have a good story to tell you about bringing Edwards into view, because how important that immediate contact is, paying attention to that, what's happening immediately, or the way you're looking at me, your posture, just feeling that, just the way I feel, then we're joined with each other. We're all joined anyway, but we forget it because we get so revved up. And also, this was important data for me about this drop-in center being on Broadway. Because then I went and talked to the staff, and the staff were all scared too. Not by this guy, but by being on Broadway. I don't know if you know Broadway in North Minneapolis. So we moved the center from Broadway to a safer part of North Minneapolis. We weren't going to abandon North Minneapolis, but a safer part of North Minneapolis. So that data from my consciousness was important. That was important. It wasn't just the contact, it was what I said about it, what I learned about my own experience, my own vulnerability, my own fear. Because other staff were feeling the same thing. So now you should be convinced that bringing the skandhas into view, those aggregates are called the skandhas, is a cool to do and can be helpful and help you feel connected with everything. And be more equanimous in your life. Be more just even with whatever is happening, whatever it is, whatever kind of webs. And now it's important for me to remind you before the talk ends that as somebody reminded me last week, as Larry reminded me last week, that the aggregates are all made up too. That if we develop a new structure to replace the self, of bringing the aggregates into view as if they're real, then we get caught on that. We're doing it. How good a job are you, and Dokusan, I'm asking you, how good a job are you doing at bringing the aggregates into view? And he's doing a pretty good job, and he's doing a worse job. But Pamela, she's doing a great job. So I want her as my disciple. She doesn't have to cut her hair, you know. Right? So we need to remember, this is just skillful means. This is just skillful means, because what do we chant every morning in the Heart Sutra? We essentially chant no aggregates. We say there are no aggregates, because at the time the Heart Sutra was written, this aggregate practice was what everybody did, and everybody compared with everyone else who was doing it best. Like, they pretended they weren't comparing, because they're not supposed to, but that's what they were doing. And so the Heart Sutra is all about no form, no feelings, no perceptions, no formations, no consciousness, no eyes, no ears, no da, na, 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 na. And so I chanted that for 4 years, not knowing what it was all about, that it's actually a negation of Buddhist catechism. Well, I never learned Buddhist catechism in the first place. I'm a Unitarian, so what's all this no? I thought all this no stuff is pretty cool. But it's, yeah, so we just need to remind ourselves of that. So I'm going to finish with a story about my daughter. So this is summer of my daughter's fourth birthday, many, many years ago. Many, many, many years ago. We have a little, on Sundays there's a little group for kids. I don't know if we have it, where Roberta Munich had that group for kids. But on Sunday, and sometimes my son doesn't like to go. Sometimes my daughter likes to go, but he won't go with her. She doesn't want to go by herself. So I decided that I'm going to practice at home with them doing meditation, but they don't like sitting, you know. They just squirm, both of them. And I'm not going to force that on them. So I just do what I saw Roberta do. We go out in the backyard, and my son doesn't want to do it, and we lie on the grass. He'll do it for a half a minute, then he'll run off. And we look at the sky. This is a summer day. That's all we do. Lie in our backyard and look at the sky, and I probably say something zenny to Aaron, I don't know, or to Jed. Jed's gone by then, my son. And then we just look at the sky. That's what we do. So one day I was doing this with my daughter, and she's very still. She's never still. She's just turned four. She's very still. And And then it's time for us to get up, and I get up, and she doesn't even get up. But then she finally does, and I said to her, "Well, what were you thinking, Aaron?" And she said, "Nothing, Dad." That's my 4-year-old daughter. She doesn't know anything about Zen. "Nothing, Dad." And I said, "Oh, really?" She said, Dad, look at the sky. And she said, "Look at the sky, Dad. When I look at the sky, I'm the sky." That's what my 4-year-old daughter says. By the time she was 5, that was all gone. That was all gone. It's been gone ever since. Sorry. I love her, but that's our beginner's mind. That's what we're coming back to as we practice. That's why we're doing this 10,000 hours of practice. So we can come back to a joyful mind that's just starting new. Always starting new. Always fresh. Then the tangled web just sort of, it does its tangling, but it doesn't feel tangly. It feels kind of soft, fuzzy. Okay, well, that's all I want to say, and see if there are any questions or comments. Okay.
I struggle with the word aggro.
Yeah, me too.
It's an odd word.
Well, it's what it is it's yes, I struggle with it too, but it's an aggregate of what they say. What they're saying is that different components come back, come around, come together to make the feeling of contact. The different components come together to make the feeling. It's saying that the aggregates aren't really real when it's saying that they're not real things, because there are no real things in Buddhism. It's aggregates of stuff that's not stuff that's coming together. So it really is in accord with the Heart Sutra when you think of them as aggregates, because they're not really there.
Because I have tried reading about the aggregates for a really long time, tried to make that word make sense. And
yeah.
The first time
that's the difference. Mm-hmm. Other folks? Yeah.
I don't think I understand L's. Why is that good? Can you explain?
Which one?
So the second quote.
I don't remember which the second. You've got your program there.
She just said the king is asking her what she can see, and she says she can see nobody.
Yes, yes. Well, there is. So the I'm using it in the sense is that she's let go of her. Identification of somebody when she looks at you. That she sees your color, that she sees your hair, she listens to your voice, but that she doesn't see you as a separate entity that has duration in time, but rather a collection of consciousness and sun and blue and memory that comes together. And she's a little confused by that. She's pretty confused in most of it, because she hasn't done her zazen. It confuses her, because before she went down the rabbit hole, she saw you as someone whom she'd known last week, who was predictable in this way, who did this, she liked this about you, she didn't like that about you, based on her memory of you and her projection of you. She knew all that stuff. Now she's seeing you freshly, making contact with you. She doesn't know anymore. She doesn't know if you're a one or you're a two or you're a many or you're a... She doesn't know. And so there's a chance for real openness and real love, because there's no mediary. There's no... me evaluating you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she's just a Anyway, she needs Lewis Carroll needs to just give her some Zazen time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Not too much.
But it's not always. No.
Oh. Uh-huh. Okay.
It seems a little bit like a right wrong answer. That was confusing to me.
Pardon? I didn't get that one.
Well, if she had seen somebody, that would have been less. And maybe that's not less. But she can maybe still see somebody and still, have moments of complete oneness and then separation.
Yeah, sure. So let's not get too. This is an evocative. This is all evocative. Let's not make something out of it. Because we are. We're all separate. We all have histories. Mm-hmm. We all have habits. We all have. And so let's not make too much of it. Then we just got something more to trip out on. Kathleen, I think it's time's up, and I'm supposed to be only limiting this to 45 minutes, and I've gone over 10 minutes, so all the other priests in the room are going to be judging me. So maybe we can talk later. I have to say thank you very much. I certainly don't want to be judged, because then I'll have more webs. Oh, but I want more webs, so...